Welcome to Always On, a Yes podcast. This is Jovan Julian, the storytelling and alignment integrator at Yes. Yes is a 30-year-old organization that works at the intersection of the personal, interpersonal, and systemic change. We co-organize transformative learning spaces called JAMS with partners all over the globe, working together to co-create spaces of creativity, passion, and commitment. When musicians come together to jam, they bring their unique instruments, skills, and styles, and together create a new collective sound. We build on that premise, bringing together social change makers like activists, organizers, healers, lawyers, educators, artists, and more, to collaborate and co-liberate towards the world we want to see. On this show, and throughout the season, we'll be slowing down to hear story from JAM facilitants, YES staff members, and of course, YES jammers, with a focus on how folks are adapting, adjusting, and evolving to meet the moment that 2020 calls us into. We're grateful for your choice to slow down with us today. In today's episode, we're joined by Susan Brooks, a pioneer in the emerging field of therapeutic jurisprudence and an expert in experiential learning, family law, and children's rights. Inside of the Jamily, Susan has been attending the Law and Social Change Jam since its inception in 2014. The Law Jam calls in lawyers, legal professionals, and people connected to the law, regardless of field, to serve in the realm of social transformation. Starting out as a participant, Susan then helped organizing a number of jams and has been a facilitant for the past 3 years, including the first ever digital Law Jam. At JAMS, we use the language of facilitant because our facilitators also participate fully in the experience. Not so much conductors standing apart, but members of the band helping the emergent sound to reveal itself. I'm super duper excited to have you on and to talk about your life, about where you're at now in 2020, what a year it's been, and also about how JAM tools are being incorporated into your law classes and into your life. Thanks for joining us.
Yay. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Maybe the first thing we can start with is, like, where are you in 2020? What has your process been like? Where does your journey find you today?
2020, it's a really interesting year for me. It's actually going to be my 60th year around the sun. And so it's kind of a momentous year. I mean, it was going to be anyway, but then the way that it's been playing out is, you know, who could have ever predicted? And I've been trying to, and I'm not saying I can live into this at every moment. And I've been trying to see this way of existing as an opportunity to reflect, to explore, you know, to live into more of the reality of the uncertainty of life, which is what we're all experiencing, and honor the aspects of it that really are about grieving or loss or sadness. And it feels like it's a lot about paradoxes. And the both and, you know, the heaviness and the ease, you know, the frustration and anger and the sadness, the kind of moments of sweetness and just, you know, just kind of, I guess, wistfulness for what seems like it was meant to happen and didn't. Yeah, it's been a very interesting journey that I feel like I'm still on.
Awesome.
The 2020 journey.
The 2020, it's been a thing, but congratulations on, wait, so has your 60th birthday happened already or is it coming up?
No, it's coming up in October.
Awesome. Yeah. October, if you have a great birthday month, I'm also an October baby. That's super exciting.
Yes.
Congratulations on, or soon to be congratulations on 60 years. That is no small feat on this planet. And I am super excited maybe to hear about, as you're entering your 60th year, how do you see, like, the JAM tools playing out in your life? How are they showing up?
Yeah, it's so it's one of the things I'm just super grateful for is my, you know, the Jamily, that community, and all the ways that it's enriched my life personally and definitely professionally. And if you were to see my syllabus and even see some of the things that I've written recently, you would know that it's really had a huge effect on the way that I think, the way I teach. I like to think that a lot of the ideas and principles were already there, and what it's done is to give me language and tools for being able to teach them in ways that I think are very relatable, mm-hmm. you know, from the standpoint of my students. So yeah, it's really infused pretty much everything in my life. I mean, not to just try to be reductionist about it, but it is, it's really been big. Yeah. And I can, of course, you know, share some examples of that.
Yeah. I'd love to hear some concrete examples of, especially I am a former teacher and as a PhD student now who also thinks often about how does the jam play out in engineering spaces? How do I bring it into my world? I'd love to hear concrete examples of how you've bought specific jam tools, practices, principles into your teaching pedagogy at Drexel.
Yeah. So, this term, this year, I'm actually teaching a kind of unique course, which is a small group of students who work directly in the community, providing legal services, because I teach at a law school. I don't know if you said all that, but and also doing some project work, partnering with community organizations. So there's such a beautiful marriage of the jam and this kind of course. So, for instance, we had our first session on Tuesday, and I started with a grounding. I mean, you could just look at the opening details in the jam facilitation manual, and you had the outline of the first three quarters of my class, you know. So we basically, you know, I did a big jam welcome. We did agreements. We talked about language. We did intentions. We did an exercise with intentions. I always show the graphic of the fields of transformation. I talked about the zones, you know, so it's like, it's all there, you know, it's all the foundational, material that we'll work with for the year. And, I found that it's just so effective. I actually had one student who had to miss the first session. And so I did a bit of a tutorial with her. I was thinking actually about the ways that we integrate people who show up at the jam.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, this is what Shilpa would do, right? What would Shilpa do? So, you know, and I sat with her and, you know, one of the things she said to me when I showed her, I had a little slide of the agreements and, you know, tentative agreements and then conversation with the students. She said, I wish every law teacher would do this at the beginning of class. Like, we need this at the beginning of every class. And I have used most of those tools, now, you know, pretty much I've built them into, the first class that I teach in any course. Mm-hmm. So that's one example just from this week.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much for that. I have like some questions. I don't know if we'll get to some of them, but like, I'm thinking, how do your students, like, as they move to different classes, are they bringing these sort of tools into classes? Are they bringing it as they become professors in other spaces? How do your colleagues sort of think about these things? So yes, I have many questions. If any of those, you know, pop into your head as you go, I'd love to hear more.
Well, let me just, I'll interject one example, which is so great. Mm-hmm. So I was looking at a couple of other colleagues' materials, one of whom, like I was looking at something that she created as a presentation. And there it was, the zones, like in her presentation.
Yeah.
And
I
so,
love it.
You know, I'm not going to say every colleague, but those that mm-hmm. I work with kind of more closely that have heard me and seen me share these tools. You know, I think it has, I like to think that it has influenced them.
Right.
I have one more great story from last year. This is last spring, but one of my colleagues, we were in a meeting and she was quoting one of her students And she said, oh, you know, this student, you know, he's got this like mantra, you know, like he's always talking about kind of stretching, like the stretch zone, and like how we need to get more comfortable with being uncomfortable. And I was like, yeah, he heard that from me. So it's like she learned that from her student who learned that, you know, kind of heard me kind of using that theme in the course that I taught. So, yeah, I mean, I kind of, you know, it's sort of part of what we, you know, what we talk about when we talk about fractals, you know, you know, growing what we pay attention to and all of that, like seeing the ripple effects of this, you know, in small ways and
small ways and big ways. Transformative ways. We're in 2020 and our how we teach, where we teach, whether it's online or digital, is changing. I wonder, one, is your right now, are you teaching online? Are you teaching in person? How are you navigating that? And whether or not you see, like, are you, is that increasing the tools that you're using from the jam in your space, decreasing it, changing it? Yeah, how has your teaching practice transformed in this moment?
Yeah, I would say that it's definitely, well, I am right now teaching online and will be at least for the foreseeable future. And I would say two things. One is that the experience of doing the jam as a virtual experience encouraged me, you know, kind of motivated me in the sense that that there's more that I could do with the jam tools that would be effective, you know, from in an online space. And so it's definitely encouraged me to use even more than I might have for a couple of different reasons. You know, one is I think the jam being an experience that encourages people to bring their whole selves and including being in their bodies, like being in our bodies. And I think that embodied aspect is something that we really need to be intentional about bringing into the virtual space and encouraging students to move, to like, to be creative, to, so there's that physicality that I think is important that, that is encouraged in the jam tools. And then I think the, also the visual aspect of it, like all these really wonderful visual tools, I think are very helpful in translating teaching into a virtual space.
Yeah.
And then I think something, you know, in particular about this moment and the pandemic and even the, you know, the huge amount of churning around institutional racism and injustice and is that that idea of inviting slowness and spaciousness into our conversations, I think is another really important principle of the jam that I think we need to be bringing into these virtual spaces. So yeah, and then I think even, you know, some of the community building elements. So I've thought about it. I've never quite gotten to the point of like doing Secret Angels. And I've decided this year to try it because I think we need a community building tool that's more, you know, that really is about acts of kindness and being generative and this idea of gifting. And so, yeah, so I but these are law students. So I was trying to come up with a way of framing it that would hopefully land well. So I came up with silent partners because that's actually a thing in law. You know, there are these silent partners who often are contributing to like a startup or, you know, some, but they don't necessarily want credit. Like they want to be silent partners. And so I thought it's a little bit of a double entendre. But anyway, well, we're going to try it. And I'm really excited about it. Really excited.
And I've always heard.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say that seeing the way that we did this, a lot of these different components in the virtual jam really helped me to be able to apply that, you know, and bring that into the classroom space, the virtual classroom space.
In the river, figuring out how to take the water from one side to the other. I love it. I always hear stories about the log jam and your y'all's epics agreement setting sessions. So in my head, I'm like, oh, where's the agreement setting in a law school class different than at the log jam? How did that feel?
Well, I will say this, we've had an evolution of that experience. I think the first couple of years it was kind of epic. And then we realized that there were probably things that we were doing or maybe not doing that were possibly inviting more churning around agreements than in ways that weren't that productive. So I think we've shifted our way of presenting that information and inviting the conversations around it. And it's actually been very easeful the last few years. And I would say in my class, it went very well. And students, I've had different experiences of it. I mean, I think it often depends on the expectation that we set. And it's really important, I think, with law students to say this is not about legal contracts or, when we talk about agreements, we're talking about it's really a lot about the framing, right? We talk a lot in the jam language about framing and weaving. So this is a lot about the framing. And
Absolutely.
so I think framing agreements as a way of talking about how we want to do our work together, as opposed to some sort of binding legal document, I think is important to make that distinction, at least with law students and lawyers.
That's such a wonderful learning to sort of pass forward to folks who are thinking maybe right now about how they're gonna bring their learning communities into being. I wonder, are there any other, or I'm sure there are other, are there just a few like learnings that you'd like to share forward for other Jamly members or from just the wider world who might listen to this podcast? Of tools that would be helpful for someone who's an instructor or facilitator of a learning community in this moment.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think for me, really the universal ones are the fields of transformation and the zones. Like those, I think can be useful in almost any space, and I would say, I mean, I've used them in workshops with lawyers out in the community. And I did an interesting workshop for the New Hampshire Women's Bar Association and shared those tools with them. And so I think there's a versatility, partly because the fields of transformation is a way of understanding the interconnectedness of how the importance of cultivating more self-awareness as having a direct effect on larger systems, because I think often people have difficulty seeing that those two as connected, and so I think seeing that and talking through that, I think, is important. Seeing the connections of personal, interpersonal, systemic, and then I think the zones is a way of helping people. And again, we know that these tools are rough approximations. I mean, they're tools, literally. But I think it can help. To the extent that, for me anyway, cultivating greater self-awareness is a huge part of the work that I think everyone needs to be doing in this lifelong work. Having that kind of tool that's so easily accessible to talk about that, and to help people have a common language to describe what's going on for them, I think is been, those two I think are the most versatile. And then there are lots of others I could talk about too.
I could talk about what could
I
you
could
talk
talk
about right
about
now?
it. By the way, I'm also thinking about using that with my students that I could talk about.
I could
That's a
talk about
great
one of my favorite tools. One of my friends the other day was
tool.
just like, you know what? Let's just do I could talk about and we I could talk about and it was really wonderful. So
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
yeah, personal, interpersonal, systemic, school, it's all over the place.
Oh, I was going to say another one that I've used a lot, and I actually was using it before I started attending the jam, is appreciative interviewing. Appreciative inquiry, appreciative interviewing. It's a really wonderful tool. And I think in this moment in particular, because it helps people tap into and lift up their own kind of what they've been able to do and their own strengths, you know, in a way, like what they have to offer. And I think sometimes that can be hard to access in this kind of, you know, challenging time that we're living in.
Shifting gears a little bit, but I cannot get off this line without asking, what exactly is therapeutic jurisprudence?
Jurisprudence. Therapeutic jurisprudence. I know, it's a mouthful. So basically, it's a field of inquiry. It's a kind of critical studies within the legal, you know, kind of academic world, and actually has had a big influence on judges and other practitioners. And, you know, basically there was a period of time where there were a lot of different kind of critical lenses that started to be applied to looking at the law. So there's kind of like a critical race sort of lens, there's a critical feminist lens. And so this is really taking a critical view of the law from the standpoint of psychological well-being. And, you know, it really was started by two law professors who had an interest in psychology, one of whom has had a PhD. And, you know, they started this line of inquiry to say, you know, how much, when we think about the law and what we're promoting in the law, how much do we think about the impact of the law on people's well-being? We tend to focus a lot on issues of fairness and due process and other concerns, and they really wanted to lift up this idea of well-being. Awesome. So that's kind of where it started from. And when I learned about it, I thought, oh, okay, well, this is a frame or this is a lens that, you know, is aligned with some of my concerns. And so it became kind of a platform to explore some different issues.
Awesome. Thanks for that.
Yeah.
As we come sort of to the closing section of the interview, I think the question that is like rising up to the top for me is a question about vision and dreams. I wonder what, if any, hope you would hold for the Jamily in terms of how we can be in relationship and in practice with each other in this moment as 2020 slowly comes to an end.
Wow. Okay. So that's a great question. What I saw happen in this virtual jam that we created for the Law and Social Change Jam was a real, maybe even, I mean, it's hard to compare, of course, but in some ways, even more, if anything, of interest and motivation for people to want to stay connected to each other after the jam ended. And interestingly, it was less of a transition because we were already
but, yeah.
They are connecting through these this online, you know, kind of virtual space. And that has continued. We have a WhatsApp group and people are continuing to be in conversation and share things that are happening in their own world and their own lives, and then, you know, offer support to each other. And so I think there's a lot of potential. I mean, I have a lot of hope, I guess, and a lot of I feel very hopeful about the ways that continuing to be able to jam and finding these creative ways to jam, even in a virtual space, can build these webs, sort of strengthen these webs of interconnectedness and support. And even we've been doing these jam leadership calls and, you know, connecting with people in different on different continents and different time zones, like, you know, even beyond what we might have thought would be possible or workable. And so that feels hopeful to me. And I see that happening in other spaces also, you know, other spaces where people are trying to create more dialogue and connection across difference. So that feels hopeful. You know, and my own, I mean, you didn't ask this exactly, but I will just add that in my own world, kind of professional world, I'm really trying to figure out how to create the capacity for jamming and being familiar with and sharing more jam tools, you know, in these different communities that, you know, at least up till now, haven't had much access to these kinds of retreats or whatever we want to call them. And so that feels really hopeful to me also, that I think thinking about ways to hopefully impart some of these tools to people who are living in historically marginalized communities, and so that they can pay those or carry those forward and share them and use them for dialogue and conflict resolution, relationship building, all the ways that we use them in the jam.
Awesome. I want to share my deep gratitude for your willingness to slow down with us here, to share your expertise, to share your wisdom and your stories. I look forward to hearing more in the future from you, and to hear how this recording, these lessons, are being taken into others' practices. I know I'm going to take a number of this into, not necessarily, I'm not a professor, but at least into my teaching assistant hours, and I hope others do as well. Thanks again so much for being with us. And
my pleasure.
We hope you have a great day.
Anytime.
Thank you for tuning in to Always On, a Yes podcast. Again, this was Jovan Julien. Join us in the next few weeks for more episodes of Season 2. And if you're interested in participating in a future episode, please email us at Jovan, J-O-V-A-N, @yesworld.org. See you next week.